And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, we look at the shooting in Orlando, an outrage around the country and in our own community.
Live in studio, we speak with KBOO's own Nia Nguyen and Alyssa Pagan about the current political climate and how it affects transphobia.
And Deborah Shipman from Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women USA discusses the 1,000 Indigenous women missing in the United States.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, June 13th, 2016. I'm Theo Burke.
And I'm Jenny Yokoyama. Florida authorities are still in the process of notifying families of those killed early Sunday in a massacre at the Pulse LGBTQIA nightclub in Orlando. The mass murder of 49 people sparked nationwide shock and outpouring of solidarity. The fatal shooting of the perpetrator by police brought the death toll to 50. People organized spontaneous vigils across the country Sunday, and more are expected today. Donors have flocked to the blood banks across Florida. Monday morning, all but one victim had been identified. Authorities still had 23 families to notify that their loved ones were among the dead. Nell Abram with Free Speech Radio News has more.
We are not afraid.
Hundreds of mourners gathered Sunday evening in Tampa's historic Ybor City to share their grief and express their anger after the massacre at the prominent Pulse Gay Club in nearby Orlando. Michael Martinez formerly worked security at the club and explains that it was much more than just a gay bar.
Pulse is a place where the international community really comes together because you get people, you know, when I work the door, I see IDs from all over the country, all over the world, and people just get there because they can be themselves, they can be at ease. You didn't have altercations, you didn't have any problems. Everybody was accepting.
Gunman Omar Mateen, a 29-year-old U.S. citizen, entered Pulse about 2 a.m. Sunday morning. Armed with a semi-automatic AR-15 and a handgun, he opened fire, indiscriminately shooting more than 100 patrons. Orlando police say after engaging in a shootout with officers, Mateen retreated into the club, barricaded himself in a bathroom, and a hostage situation ensued. As people trapped inside frantically texted their loved ones and word of the massacre spread through social media, family and friends flocked to the scene. About 3 hours after the initial barrage of gunfire, police forced their way into the building with an armed vehicle, freed dozens of hostages, and killed the gunman. By the time the sun rose, anguished families, desperate for information, gathered at a nearby hospital.
Edward Sotomayor Jr., he was 24. Stanley Almodovar III, he was 23.
President Barack Obama addressed the nation just hours after the end of the siege, and again Monday morning, saying the U.S. has to grapple with combating organized terrorist groups overseas while also identifying homegrown extremists influenced by sexist and homophobic ideologies.
The point is that if we have self-radicalized individuals in this country, then they are going to be very difficult, oftentimes, to find ahead of time. And how easy it is for them to obtain weapons is, in some cases, going to make a difference as to whether they're able to carry out attacks like this or not. We make it very easy for individuals who are troubled or disturbed or want to engage in violent acts to get very powerful weapons very quickly. And that's a problem. It's a problem regardless of their motivations. It's a problem for a young man who can walk into a church in South Carolina and murder 9 people who offered to pray with him. It's a problem, when an angry young man on a college campus decides to shoot people because he feels disrespected. It's certainly a problem when we have organizations like ISIL or Al-Qaeda who are actively trying to promote violence. and are doing so very effectively over the internet.
People who knew Mateen have said he was both aggressive and homophobic. The FBI interviewed him three times since 2013 for allegedly making pro-extremist statements and after a member of his mosque carried out a suicide attack in Syria. Monday, FBI Director James Comey detailed the extensive investigations that led the Bureau to determine that Mateen was not a threat. He also described the erratic allegiances claimed by the shooter during brief calls with 911 operators in the midst of the siege.
During the calls, he said he was doing this for the leader of ISIL, who he named and pledged loyalty to, but he also appeared to claim solidarity with the perpetrators of the Boston Marathon bombing and solidarity with a Florida man who died as a suicide bomber in Syria for al-Nusra Front, a group in conflict with the so-called Islamic State. The bombers at the Boston Marathon and the suicide bomber from Florida were not inspired by ISIL, which adds a little bit to the confusion about his motives. And of course, we're working to understand what role anti-gay bigotry may have played in motivating this attack, an attack that occurred during the very month when we recognize and celebrate our LGBT brothers and sisters.
Law enforcement held regular press briefings throughout the day Sunday, and politicians hastened to the microphones as well. Ashley Green is with the Tampa Bay Area Dream Defenders. She told the crowd at the Sunday vigil that she spent the day glued to the news, hoping to see friends in the live shots while fearing she'd hear their names among the dead.
I started to see Marco Rubio and Rick Scott and Pam Bondi, people who have literally threatened the safety of the very people at that club, get up and talk about mourning. Talk about how we have to stand up against terrorism.
Green was referring to Florida's Republican senator, its governor, and the state attorney general.
I want to know if they mourned when they fought for bathroom bills, when they fought against anti-bullying laws, when they fought against gay marriage, when they fought against people in the military, when they fought to get families deported, when they fought or got up and made a stump speech and a kid who was at that club that night had to hear some racial slur about going back to their country. Let's not forget that this was Latin night at Pulse. And the victims were the same people that they claim to mourn, yet want to get out of the state of Florida.
As candles were lit at the Tampa vigil, silence fell over the crowd. After a few moments of quiet reflection under an exquisite Florida sunset, people quietly placed their candles around an improvised Pulse memorial set up on the sidewalk and slowly made their way back down the historic avenue. Nell Abram, FSRN, Tampa.
Meanwhile, nearly 2,000 Portlanders gathered Sunday evening to remember the victims of the mass shooting in Orlando and to show support for the LGBTQIA community. The vigil was held at the Embers Avenue, a longtime gay bar and dance club in Northwest Portland. KBOO's Ray Bodwell had an opportunity to speak with organizer Eric Zimmerman.
Eric, how did the vigil come about, and what was your role in organizing it?
Well, yesterday, like a lot of people, I think, I woke up to the news about what had happened in Orlando, and there was a sense of not wanting to be alone that I had, and I think that there was a lot of energy, but not sure what to do. Did we feel grief? Were we angry? And I called my friend Stephen Cassell, who also helped me organize this, and the two of us just said, you know, we've got to do something.
My understanding is that there were nearly 2,000 attendees or something in that neighborhood. How would you describe the mood of the crowd?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of emotions, and it changed based on the tone of a speaker or what was happening at the moment. But I think overall, shock and some loneliness on behalf of individuals, which is, I think, what drove folks to come together, was in this kind of moment where you're watching people from our community who were gunned down in a place that was supposed to be safe for them. There's some loneliness that exists there, and coming together was, I think, very reassuring for folks. It brought up a lot of feelings. There was everything from hugs and laughter to crying and weeping in the crowd. It was different for every person, and I think that was something that was, I think that was important.
I think we all tend to think of Portland as an LGBTQ-friendly community. Do you have a sense, or does the community worry about a similar type of attack in Portland?
You know, I think I've heard people individually have a worry. I have also heard many people who are not worried, you know, who there is an underlying sense for anybody in the LGBTQ community that violence is really not that far removed from our history. And this is an example of that.
I read earlier today that approximately 2% of the LGBTQ community, or 2% of the population at large, would fit into the LGBTQ community, yet almost 18% of violent hate crimes are targeted at that group.
I mean, there you go. I mean, any minority group, I think, can point to disparities and higher levels of violence than the mainstream culture, and we're not that far removed from this type of violence, and here we see it again. And this is something that affects every race and creed and religion, and because in all of those groups we have members of the LGBT community.
What are your next steps?
Well, you know, this is the beginning of Portland's Pride Week, and it's important that we make this celebration this week particularly good and heartfelt, and that everybody who wants to participate does.
Eric, thank you so much for your comments.
Well, thank you for following up. I appreciate it, and I hope the word gets out to folks that we're standing up.
The massacre in Orlando has prompted an outpouring of grief and sympathy. American Muslims have denounced the attack and are standing in solidarity with the LGBTQIA community. Many Islamic organizations and leaders have spoken out against the attacks. To learn more, KBOO reporter Doug McVeigh spoke with Sahar Ballou, Executive Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations San Francisco Bay Area Office.
My name is Sahar Ballou. I am the Executive Director of the San Francisco Bay Area Office of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations. Honestly, we've actually been really moved by how supportive and open to building allyship and relationship so many people have been with the Muslim community in recent days. Members of the LGBT community and numerous advocates have reached out to the Muslim community to be very clear that they don't want this incident to further fuel Islamophobia. Unfortunately, of course, our presidential candidates and various elected officials have taken a more problematic position, have dug in their heels on things like the Muslim ban and talking about how this is a Muslim problem, rather than what we would argue it really is, homophobic hate violence, which unfortunately is not exclusive to any perpetrating community. It's something that happens across the country and should be condemned. And then, of course, gun violence. It confuses me. I don't understand how someone could own a weapon that could cause the damage that happened at this nightclub.
What can listeners do to magnify some of those, some of the rational voices that are out there, and take a stand against some of the phobia and the hate that we've heard from some?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're encouraging people to attend Orlando Solidarity vigils that are happening in their community. There have been countless vigils that have happened across the country already and will continue to happen this week. And were they here, elected officials, media personalities, or others, saying things that further divide us rather than bring us together, we urge people to hold those individuals accountable. It's so important that people in the media are hearing from their listeners and their viewers, and that our elected officials and candidates are hearing from their constituents.
Any closing thoughts for our listeners, and also where can people find out more about the Council on American Islamic Relations?
Absolutely. In closing, I strongly recommend that people reach out and push back against this horrible tragedy by building more relationships and solidarity. We are stronger when we fight hate violence together. We are stronger when we push back against homophobia, transphobia, Islamophobia, and other types of bigotry together. If people want to learn more about what CARE is doing to stand in solidarity following the Orlando attacks or our work more generally, they can visit our website, which is just www.cair.com.
Zahra, thank you so much. I've been speaking with Zahra Ballou. She is the executive director of the San Francisco office of the Council on American-Islamic Relations. This is Doug McVeigh with KBOO News.
All over our region, people are gathering together to mourn victims and support survivors of LGBTQIA violence. Starting tomorrow, Basic Rights Oregon is gathering volunteers to make ribbons to pass out during Pride Week, which starts this week in Portland. Folks are encouraged to drop by to help at 310 Southwest 4th Avenue, suite number 300, downtown. Tonight, the Q Center offers free counseling starting at 7 p.m., and the Q Center is located at 4115 North Mississippi Avenue. On Thursday, a pre-Pride vigil held at the Q Center runs from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Today, KBOO spoke with Senior Pastor Jennifer Yoakum of the Forest Grove United Church of Christ.
I think it's important for people to understand that the shooter, in choosing to shoot at a bar, this is a violation of the sanctuary that gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual people have seen for decades. The bars were where we organized. It's where we came to be free. It's where we came to know that we weren't alone. It's where we came to organize politically. Stonewall started at a bar. The bars were places where we came to play and learn about each other and love each other. So this is really a case where our sanctuary was violated. And what that says to me is that we need to find more places to create sanctuary. People, as they feel safe and called to do, need to come out, we all need to know each other. We need to know each other as beloved and beautiful and unwilling to surrender to fear, violence, and hatred. The first thing that anyone should be doing now is to keep breathing and to reach out to the people that they love and even to people that they don't know, and just to recognize that there is a spark of love. That's what animates us all. And within that recognition of that love and reaching out toward each other, we need to affirm that love and affirm that beauty. We need to be able to tell each other, God is proud of you. God thinks that you are fabulous. And that is gay and straight, and that is Anglo and Latino, and that is Black and Native, that is everyone. When we give into the fear and we think about how we need to protect each other from violence, that's when the violence wins. What we need to do is find ways to reach out and affirm each other's love, affirm each other's dignity, and affirm each other's contribution to this community, to this planet. That's what we need to do.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
I'm going to skip this first question. How can local communities organize against the kind of mass violence that erupted in Orlando, Florida over the past weekend? Nia Nguyen and Alisa Pagan, who are grassroots activists and members of Portland State University's Student Union, as well as members of our local trans community. Listeners may also know Nia from her show, Bread and Roses, here on KBOO. Thank you very much for coming in, Nia and Alisa.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for having us.
Let's just start with the difficult question. Can you talk about the issue of violence against the LGBTQIA community, especially here in Portland? I know that is not something that is not unheard of. Do you see this case that happened in Orlando? Do you see this as a terrorism case, as the Obama administration has been saying? Or do you see this more as a hate crime?
Yeah, I think that on a national level, the violence that happens to queer people of color happens so much that that's oftentimes it's taken out of the conversation. And I mean, even like with the news of the story coming out, like we are completely erased from it, and that is very problematic in itself.
So And also it's Alyssa, not Elisa. But okay.
Sorry about that, Alyssa.
Yeah. So something that strikes me is the fact that there's a missing piece here, that when we talk about violence against any group, but particularly against LGBTQI people, I'm so shocked that people are not talking about how foundational violence is to this country, mm-hmm. that this is a continuing settler colonial project that has its basis in genocide of indigenous people and violent enslavement and torture of stolen Africans. And in 2016, we're not at a place where there's actually been a real move to correct that, to even apologize for it and say that we want to make something that is drastically different from that. So that there are all sorts of violence that's bring forth and come forward is not surprising to me. What becomes apparent is that so much of the violence that people like me experience on a regular basis is intentionally erased so that we can praise liberalism and say that we have a secular democracy where people are relatively safe and everyone should take it as a model. Mm-hmm. And I see it as I see that as propaganda, and that it's moments like this that propaganda is exposed. And I'm very happy to expose it further. So this question of, is it terrorism? I say, absolutely, it is terrorism against a minority group. Right. Hate crimes, to say, is it a hate crime or is it terrorism? I would say that a hate crime is terrorism. Certainly, whenever someone acts out violently towards the LGBTQIA community, it's an act of terrorism to say, I don't want you to be exerting yourself or showing the world who you are. I don't want you to have a public face. I want you to be ashamed of yourself. I want you to be mired in self-loathing. And since you dare to speak up for yourself and to show yourself publicly, I'm going to gun you down. And I think it's important to say, like, the way that we see terrorism in terms of national security, No, this is not about someone who hates America and wants to hurt America, because this person did not hit a city building, public building, state building. They hit a nightclub where ostensibly no one there has any notable institutional power or is a government official. So to the call that says this was an attack against America, well, not exactly. Because the last time I checked, queer and trans Latinx people are not people who are heralded as Americans in any other circumstances. Hello, bathroom bill.
Mm-hmm.
How can we be legitimizing legislation on the floor of Congress to be heard by politicians to argue about whether or not we're going to sanction discrimination? People say, oh, that's a perfectly fine thing to argue in Congress and in the Senate. We should talk about that. Well, if that's the foundation that you're setting, if you're legitimizing a point of view that says we should be marginalizing people to the point of them not even being able to go to the bathroom, they shouldn't be able to access public space and public services, well, then why wouldn't you expect someone to come and shoot people? Because you said it's all right. You told the highest level of law in this land that this is a perfectly fine thing to be debating. So yeah, people are going to take it into their own hands. So if we're going to talk about placing blame, let's talk about where it comes from and not treat this like it's a one-off. It's a perfectly logical thing for someone to act violently and to be a vigilante when that ideology is put forth as something that's perfectly valid.
It is extremely disgusting as well as a story begins to unravel that the politicians quickly jump to divide us even further as this murderer is also a person of color who completely turned our communities apart from each other. So it's just absolutely disgusting.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit about that division that is we see being pitted in the media right now? How can communities, do you feel, can come together? Do you see that happening here in Portland? I know we're just a couple of days out, but we've just had these stories about the communities coming together. What are you guys hearing?
I'm hearing a lot of Islamophobia, and I find that really disheartening. That the media has bolstered this image of this murderer as someone who is like connected with the Islamic State when he's out, you know, like the images that are being released, he's wearing an FBI shirt and NYPD shirt. Like he wants to be a cop. He's so American and he wants to be so American. And the idea that he got triggered from seeing two men kissing, there's something deeply wrong about that, but that's just like the violence that is just like the ideology that we live in, that violence, like Alyssa has said, has stemmed from the foundation of this nation.
So I want to say that I've also seen quite a bit of Islamophobia. I spoke at a vigil last night that was put together by Portland Trans Pride, and one of the main messages that I put forward was that it's very important for everyone that was listening not to slip into the trick of making this about Islam. Because I'll tell you what, when I heard about this story, when I heard about what happened at Pulse Orlando, I was at an iftar dinner at a beautiful Palestinian family's house. Everybody knew I was trans. Everyone embraced me and treated me with the utmost respect and gratitude for me being there, not to mention the amazing food. Thank you, Mustafa family. So I felt like it was so important for me to drive that home, that just because you may not want to look at Muslims complexly and look at Islam complexly doesn't mean that I'm not going to do it. So the call for me as a trans Latina woman to see quote unquote radical Islam problem and to look at Muslims with more suspicion as if they're my enemy, I'm not falling for that. No, thank you. And by the way, the security agency that Nia was talking about is G4S. That's where he worked. That's where Omar worked.
Yeah.
And speaking about being at a Palestinian iftar dinner, G4S is also the company that is demolishing Palestinian homes and neighborhood in illegal Israeli settlements. Mm-hmm. So you want to talk right. about coming back around. That's very important to note. This man loved militarism. Yeah. He loved police.
Yeah.
Look at the shirt. Look at the pictures that are being put out. They have NYPD on them. Well, if you love violence, if you're a violent person, well, why wouldn't you be praising NYPD?
Yeah.
You know, we just have a couple minutes left, and as members of Portland State University Student Union, Nia, I know you're just finishing up at Portland State, but I want to ask you guys about what has it been like to be a trans student of color at Portland State? What was your experience like?
There are no safe spaces, so I just go out because I go out and experience the world and deal with it from, you know, just I do what I have to do.
Did you feel that the administration had your, well, quote unquote, had your back, you know?
No, they did not have my back. I had a meeting with the president, Vim Vavel, and I told him straight to his face how I feel about security and how I feel about officers. And he looked at me and blinked, and he had nothing to say. Like, really, he didn't believe me. So, and even like the security officers at school are connected to G4S as well, and they're being trained by them. Just so, it's all connected, that they, that this cycle of violence is going to continue to happen and continue to create all of these unsafe spaces for us.
Yes. I want everybody to congratulate Nia on making it through. She just graduated. You referenced it, but if everyone listening can sort of take a minute and give her an applause from wherever they are, we're very happy. My experience is very similar. The administration has not accidentally painted me and my activism as sort of off the wall, unstable, angry, a rebel without a cause, as if I don't know that that is inextricably linked to the fact that I'm trans and that I'm a woman of color. Oh, well, I'm irrational. Why would you be afraid of us arming campus security, despite the fact that students, staff, and faculty dramatically didn't want it, and we didn't take a vote, and we did it anyway? And now, every time I see one of the officers, they smirk at me. And they look at me and they take an extra second and they stare at me.
Well, you know, we're running out of time. And I just want to make sure that I ask you the most important question. How can our listeners support the trans community right now?
I want to say there's Portland TransUnity, which is an organization that that I've done some work with. Totally grassroots organization in desperate need of being supported. Lyles McFarland is my friend that is at the helm of that organization that does really good work. The Trans March is going to be happening on the Friday of Pride. And I think that when I see people who show up to Trans Pride, it really warms my heart, because most people go to the main parade, and I'm not going to be ultra left and say that we need to, you know, be separate. But when people make the effort to actually come out to the Trans March, it means a little bit more to me, and I really appreciate that. So I hope to see everybody at the Trans March coming up, and we can talk about how we might want to do some work together going forward.
And when is that, the Trans March? It's on Sunday?
No, the Pride March is on Sunday. The Trans March is on that Friday.
Friday. Yeah. What time?
I'm not sure. People should look up Portland Trans Unity to find out all of the information.
Okay, well, thank you very much. That's Nia Nguyen and Alisa Pagan. Thank you very much for coming in very last minute and speaking to us about this issue that is just so important to talk about.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us.